Hello, today I'm with Warren Coleman. Warren is a former member of the Castanets Club, a great comedy combo from days gone past, and was a writer and director on Happy Feet and a writer on Happy Feet 2.
That's right. Gee, that's pretty good. You've recalled that information. That's
Well, you did tell me about 2 seconds ago.
I know, but
I know I'm getting old, but I'm not that old.
Sharp, that's what I say. Sharp.
I'm Jimmy Thompson. This is the Flat Chat Wrap. Warren.
Yes, Jimmy.
Welcome to the wrap.
Thank you so much. You know, I feel very wrapped to be here.
Well, you're wrapped, yes. And you couldn't possibly know this, listeners, but Warren lives so close to me, he could actually turn around in his chair and look at his apartment block.
But I won't do that because it'll be squeaky.
It'll be squeaky. It's a very squeaky chair. And despite that, we meet probably, about once every 2 years?
That's right.
We bump into each other and remember that we quite like each other.
That's right. It turns out we're actually pretty good mates, but who knew?
And then people just watch us gabbling, doing 2 years of conversation.
That's true.
In one stretch.
That's true.
So we are here today to talk about apartments, because that's probably something you don't talk a lot about, I would think.
Not normal. Well, you'd be surprised. My conversation has steered more towards apartments in recent times because...
You're purchasing.
We're purchasing one and at the same time selling the one that we've been in for almost 30 years. So
wow.
It's a long time. I tell you what, Peter Packup he's difficult to dislodge after 30 years. He leaves a lot of stuff around.
I think you just leave. You know, you put a sign on a pole in the cross saying, the doors to this flat will be open.
Pop in.
Take
everything you like.
Yeah.
Look, I've got a mate who... my writing partner, actually, he's completely the opposite. He's moved around a lot in recent years.
Yeah.
And he likes to say that he can move in 20 minutes. And having seen him and his gear...
Really?
I think it's true. He can pretty much move anywhere in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know people who can do that. Usually, the sound of police sirens...
is very encouraging to that movement.
You suddenly go, they move very quickly. That suitcase.
Yeah. Oh, gee, that wasn't as heavy as look.
Now, you've, as a showbiz person, which you undoubtedly are, you would have stayed in a variety of places in your long and illustrious career.
You know, it's really funny. I was thinking about this just the other day, and it wasn't until I was quite into my 20s that I ever actually lived in a house. I was always in apartments, or I had a room in a house. So
right.
It was kind of like a house, but it wasn't, you weren't responsible for the whole thing. And it didn't feel like a house. It felt like an apartment in some ways, or a shared house apartment. But I didn't get into a house until my mid-20s, and it was an unusual experience because, I wasn't really au fait with the whole thing of, you had to patrol the boundaries. You get a whole different sort of perspective. But once and on the road, of course, traveling, you're always staying. I always feel like we used to think of it as the light switch rule.
Right.
If you walked into the room and had no idea where the light switch was, or worse, you went for where the light switch was last week.
Right.
Which often happened.
Yeah.
I toured across the US with a show. I was a director of a show a couple of times, long tours across the US. The second tour was what they call bus and truck. So
right.
First tour was sit down, so you were in each place 2 to 4 weeks.
Right.
But the second tour was one or two nights in each place, and it went many, many weeks. And we went from Maine to Arkansas. And that tour was particularly grueling in that sense. The show was great, but...
Yeah. What was the show?
The show was The Real Live Brady Bunch.
Richie
put together by Jill Soloway and Faith Soloway, now, of course, much better known for being the creators of Transparent on Amazon.
Oh, wow.
One of the first Emmy-winning shows for Amazon. And Faith is Jill's sister, and Faith's the musician, and they wrote together the Transparent musical finale. But they originally created The Real Live Brady Bunch by copying scripts from the original show and performing them live on stage in front of a live audience.
How clever.
Toured across the US.
And you directed that?
I directed it in Australia.
Right.
I went over and met them. I had to get their imprimatur, and they said I was okay. And so I came back and directed it here. And then when that show set off on a couple of tours across the US, they would prefer to stay in LA and try and sell their stuff. So I took it down on tour. I was the tour director, essentially.
Right, right.
And it was tremendously, it was a great experience because you're playing to, you know, the first tour was just playing, learning to American audiences in very, very different regions. The second tour was that plus you were working off in 2,000-seat arenas, you know.
Wow.
That's not an arena, but I mean,
it's big.
In terms of
it's
comedy.
Big. It's a lot of people.
Independent theatre, it's a lot of people. One place in Schenectady, I think, was nearly 3,000 people. So you'd have the way the laugh would go up to the back and then come back down again, and the actors had to, you had to learn with them how to ride that wave.
Wow.
Something you really can't do here. And then tomorrow night, you're in another place.
Right.
Which is not dissimilar. So you'd really needed to be agile on your feet, learn where the laughs were. And it gave you experience that was very much harder to get here because there just aren't the scale of shows that you play here.
No.
Especially independent, unusual alternative comedies, which essentially the Brady's was, even though it traded on a very famous name. It was people like Andy Richter and, you know, a lot of people who've gone on to be, you know, fairly well known in as writers or directors or performers. But in terms of accommodation, in terms of where to stay,
you're always
in like Holiday Inns, or because it was a pretty bare bones tour. We just had a bus, and Davy Jones from the Monkees was at this the same time, and he actually had terrific. I learned a lot of things from Davy, not all of which can be discussed in a family magazine, but he had been, of course, touring for many years. And he had a couple of basic tips. He said, always the most important thing. He said is to always carry earplugs. Because you never know when the tour manager puts you in, distributes the rooms randomly.
Yeah.
You can be sure that sooner or later you'll be the person who's closest to the elevator, or worse, to the part of the kitchen where they tip all the bottles out at 3 in the morning and all the bottles just get
dumped. Or the soft
dumped.
Drink machine.
The soft drink machine. There's always something.
Yeah.
And if you have earplugs, you have much, much better chance of getting a reasonable night's sleep. And so I took that advice, and that was actually one of the better things.
I
was almost always sharing with somebody else, but that was also was like apartment living, except that you're all in one room.
Yeah, wow.
And
right, roommates.
Totally.
And, oh,
it was like
God.
Hyper roommates, and you see each other all night during the show, and then the next then you're actually in the same room together. The next day you're on the bus together. So
right.
You really needed to. It was kind of like hyper share apartment, share house living.
Yeah.
From your early, you know, your early 20s.
And how long did this go on for? How long were you
the
on the road
tour,
for?
The first tour was about 6 to 7 months from D.C. through to Boston.
Wow.
And a lot of the actors were from Boston. So we wrapped up 6 weeks in Boston. It was great because nearly all the cast had been... Originally, the tour was supposed to start in Rhode Island, Providence.
Right.
So they were all local people, and they knew the area super well. They knew all the good restaurants, all the good bars,
yep.
And that was great. Second tour, year later, this is 94, went from Maine to Arkansas, and that was really, you know, that was real bus and truck stuff. We did play some shows in New Jersey, but mostly it was countryside stuff and Tornado Alley. And but it was, you just saw parts of the country you'd never have seen, and the motels that were all exactly the same.
Well, that was the Holiday Inn thing, wasn't it? That every room was supposed to be identical. Wherever you were in the world, the room was exactly the same.
The other joy about HI and some of the other chains was that you get free breakfast. So even if it's like just a very ordinary coffee and a donut, that gets you on the bus and you're ready to, you know, fall back to sleep while the bus drives you to the next venue. Because pretty much the schedule is you arrive on the bus, the tech crew have left 12 hours before you, and they've set the show up. You arrive, you go to the hotel, you go from the hotel to the venue, check everything out, make sure it's all right, do the show, do the post-show, the parties, whatever, and you get back on the bus, go back to the hotel, repeat.
Wow.
And that's what you do every day for, I think the second tour, even though it was more, there were more places we went to, I think it was only 6 weeks rather than six months, something like that anyway. It wasn't anywhere near as long, but it was still plenty long enough.
Well, some of it, in the original tour, you'd probably be doing two or three nights in the one place.
Oh, the original tour, we were doing at least a week. Most of the time, we were doing 2 to 4 weeks in each place.
Right.
So even though it's 6 months, you don't move as often. We probably only moved half a dozen times.
Yeah.
But the second tour, we moved pretty much every night. I don't think we did a couple of consecutive nights, but not many.
Mm.
Whereas the first tour, great thing was that we got to see a lot of the country, but you actually got to go places. You know,
right.
We were in Florida long enough to go to the Dali Museum in St. Petersburg, and we were in D.C. long enough to go to all the sort of political and artists, the Smithsonian and the National Air and Space Museum, all that stuff, and that was great.
Which is amazing, yeah. My travel tip, by the way, I always carry one of these one-size-fits-all sink plugs.
Very wise.
Because you would know. You would know. You're just saying, I'm just going to wash my face and shave, and it's, where's the water going?
Where is it going? What is happening? Yes, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Actually, I saw something on the internet the other day. If you're ever stuck without a plug, you get a piece of plastic, you put it in the plug hole, and put a coin.
Ah, good thinking.
To hold it down there. And then you get enough water to wash and shave.
Yeah, the fridge is important.
It's the stuff you learn on this podcast.
I know,
it's amazing.
Incredible. It's like a Swiss Army knife, really.
And you know, you're from Newcastle originally.
No,
is that
I'm originally
correct?
From Melbourne.
I did not know that.
I was born in Melbourne, in suburban Melbourne, in Springvale, a good 15, 20 k's from Melbourne, central city. I grew up in suburbs, and then I moved to Sydney. To go to acting school to Nevada, and then from there I moved to Newcastle in the early 80s, and I was there for about from about 82 to 86,
yeah,
and then moved back here, and pretty much have been in Sydney ever since. Just spent some time in the US, but you know, mostly here.
Yeah. And now, when you would be over in the States, because your first job in Happy Feet was the voice director. Is that what you call it?
No, not really. I mean, I did a lot of jobs on Happy Feet. My title was I was a co-director and co-writer. Like these films, worse to say, a big animated feature is in a lot of ways like a dinosaur. It needs an extra brain about halfway down to keep the legs moving.
Right.
And that's sort of what we did, the sort of slightly dumb brain. Down the halfway down the machine to keep the legs moving. George Miller would be, he runs the show, it's his show.
Right.
But we would often, he would instruct us to say, listen, can you listen to all these takes of audio, all this stuff? Can you make a cut? And I'll listen to it. And he would always often extensively recut what you'd done. But the idea was that you cleared the dead wood out first. We always used to say we're building the plane as it heads down the runway.
Yeah, which just sounds like madness.
Totally, it is. Well, that's why George is, he's an extraordinary individual because, you know, he would say, well, what we are doing is we are jumping off the cliff and we are building the wings on the way down. And that you'd hope before you hit the rocks, you get to glide. And it's the daring of that. You know, we're not talking about, you know, a few $100,000 on a movie. This is a very big budget, very big international movie, and the stakes are very high. And yet, not only did he pull it off, he won the Oscar. So, you know, it was a tremendous privilege.
Because you went to the Oscars, didn't you?
I did not go. I did go to the US. I was there, but they only have so many seats per film, and the producers usually go. And because I was a co-director and co-writer, there wasn't enough seats for us. So we went to a number of parties, and actually I was heading between two parties when it was announced that we won. We weren't quite exactly sure when they made the announcement who was the best animated feature. And I suddenly started getting a lot of texts on my phone. And I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to jinx it. I'm not going to look, And I finally, I arrived at the party, they weren't watching it. They were recording it to watch it later on. It was a friend that made as a cinematographer. And finally, I checked my text and, you know, there was people congratulating, saying, well done, you guys, you've won. I thought, I've got to see if this is real. So I asked them to put it on and they did. And unfortunately, Cameron Diaz in the replay said the same thing as she said in the first one, was that, you know, Happy Feet wins. So we were very pleased.
That's great. Yeah.
Particularly, we had thought that it was Cars was up that year, and it was thought that we thought,
and it was American.
It was John Lasseter too. Yeah, so, you know, there was like he was a very popular man in the town, so there was the thought that it was going to go to them. But you know, little Aussie battler came through in the end.
Yeah, it's funny. In my very brief sojourn in LA in the Fox television office, David Martin. He'd been head of Fox here, and he went over there, and he took me over for a while, and he got a phone call saying, "You got to go to the Golden Globes tonight," and he went, "Oh, really? I was going to watch it at home." They said, "No, you are effectively the producer of." I'm trying to remember the name of the cop show. It was a hard boiled Michael Chiklis.
The Shield.
Shield, yeah.
One of the classics.
And he said, yeah, I've only been here 3 weeks, you know.
But
you are the guy who's in charge of the studio who made that, so you have to be there, and I think they won too. So.
Well, the great thing about the Golden Globes, of course, is that it's booze. It's free booze.
Right. And it shows.
It's kind of like the Logies.
Yes.
Except it's even smaller, really. So if Prince doesn't show up because it's because he'll say it's because of traffic, but it probably wasn't.
I did the Logies once. Rain Shadow had a nomination at the ABC.
Wonderful show, as I recall.
Thank you very much. And I got to do the red carpet. Right? So I'm standing there at the end of the red carpet going, wow, this is like the first and only time, as it turned out. And this very attractive young woman came up to me and she said, have you got a partner to walk down the carpet? And I said, no, I don't. She said, would you mind? Sure. So there am I in my suit, you know.
Your penguin suit.
My penguin suit with this very attractive young woman and my wife, who's a journalist, as you know.
Of course.
Has managed
that's
to get
hilarious.
A press pass
oh, that's
to
funny.
Go into the photographic right?
This what could possibly go wrong?
So she's going to take a picture of me in the red carpet. So first of all, she gets over the shock of discovering I have a new woman in my life. But then, you know, like people are going down and, you know, there's the actors.
Everyone's calling their name. Yeah.
You know, and so I'm coming past and she sees me and she goes, Jimmy. And I turn around to smile at her. And all the photographers start going, Jimmy, here, Jimmy. And then as I'm walking past, I can hear them going, Who's that guy?
Oh, yeah, I've done, believe me, Happy Feet 2, I ended up walking the blue carpet with the lovely Kate Flannery, who's was Meredith in The Office.
Yes,
the woman
who's
always drunk and flashing.
Yes.
I'd known her since The Real Life Brady's, in which she played Carol Brady. I'd known her since the early 90s. She's still a good mate of ours and terrific, very funny woman. So she offered to go down the carpet with her, which is great because everyone knew who she was.
Yeah.
Her partner, Chris Haston, is the in-house photographer at NBC Universal.
Yep.
So he knows everybody. He knows all the pro photographers, and they all know him, and so they know her. So to be with her was fantastic because everybody it made what can be a very awkward and difficult situation quite fun. I mean, George Miller loves to tell the story of when he was, I think it was Witches of Eastwick, it might have been a little later, he was doing some red carpet event and he stepped out and they're all going, George, which they do. But he thought, oh, isn't that nice? They're calling my name. And he looked up and smiled and he realized that George Clooney was right behind him.
Well, the young woman who walked up the Logie's red carpet with me was very impressed with the photographers calling my name. Okay, we are going to have to talk about apartments because that's why people listen to this. We'll take a little break, a little musical break, and we'll be back with Warren Coleman, and we'll be talking about apartments. And we're back. We got Warren Coleman in the Flat Chat Rap studio, such as it is. It's in an apartment, and that's what we're talking about. So, Warren, you are, after 30 years, you're selling your apartment.
Yes, yes.
You could do a pitch right now.
I know exactly. I'm wearing.
How many rooms has it got?
It's got a lot of rooms. No, it's got about 8 or 9 rooms. There are 2 bedrooms, 2.5 because there's a sunroom that could be converted to a bedroom, but really we use it as an office. It's not really big enough. And it's on the 3rd floor, so we get lots of light. It's a little 6-unit building from the mid-1920s. Beautiful vintage. It's been really well looked after. And it's a beautiful little street. Our street is
a cul-de-sac.
Cul-de-sac. It was, I believe, once the round drive at the front of Major Thomas Mitchell, who was the Surveyor General of New South Wales, his house in the 1810s.
Which is gone.
The house is long gone, but the drive, though covered in asphalt, something that he probably wouldn't even possibly be able to imagine, still remains. So there's a ghost of an old. It always looks like I have a brother who visits me sometimes from the other side of the harbour, and he says that it's kind of like a gated community without a gate.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, and very nice people, very arty people around there as well.
It's a long history of arty folk too. I mean, when I worked at Kendi Miller, I learned that a number of the better known hair and makeup folk and wardrobe folk who used to work at Kendi Miller, which was in those days up at the old Metro Theatre, and not that an 8-minute walk from my house, had lived in the street. So there was quite a. In fact, we originally picked the place up, and we had a long, unusual history with it. Some friends of ours who were radio and TV personalities and writers had the apartment, and they had a connection with a woman that we knew, and that's how we found out the place was available. When we left our previous place, we moved in there, yep. rented there, and then we moved from the bottom of the building to the top, and then the people who we were renting from decided to sell, and we bought directly from them.
Wow.
They were wonderful, wonderful folk.
Your partner, your wife,
yeah,
Therese?
Yeah, my partner, Therese.
Yes. She's an artist too.
She is indeed. We've both come at the art caper from different points of view.
Well, she's visual.
She's a visual artist. And
multimedia, is that?
She does work in a lot of different media. She's worked in, she's done photography and she's certainly shot some films, but really she would regard herself as a painter, a printer.
Right.
And these days she uses digital printing, does a lot of the work in the computer and then prints it up in very beautiful, fully finished form. But she used to be a collagist. She's done lots of different things, really.
You have to be careful. I was doing my degree in my MA and, chatting with the tutor. And, she was saying, we're pushing the boundaries of writing. And I said something like, well, as long as you're not going to do one of these stupid things of flashing words up on a wall, and she said, That's my work.
Yeah.
That's my new installation, which opens on Friday.
That's the last 30 years of my life.
Exactly. So you have to go, oh, yeah, I'm sure you're really good.
but the upshot of it all, of our adventure in buying an apartment, or having the apartment we have, is that we'd never actually bought an apartment on the open market.
Oh, we've never done that thing of trudging around and looking at all these. And we've lived through the period.
Yeah.
Do you remember when fights would break out and people would, they'd go to auctions and they'd bid more money than they could ever dream of owning and then break down in tears when somebody else bid $100 more. Oh, those were the fun days.
Oh, man, back when it was a contact sport.
Yeah, exactly. So you missed all that.
Missed all that, but we did sniff around a couple times in the last few years thinking, will we? And then I think, because it's usually Therese, she decided to take the bit between the teeth and thought, let's actually really seriously do this.
Yes.
And once she started to get that underway,
yes.
It all started rolling on. The next thing I knew, I'm putting things in boxes and trying to figure out.
Are you doing that Japanese woman thing of holding things up and
no, which much
deciding
more
if it gives you?
Are you the Swedish death cleaning book?
No.
It's called Swedish death cleaning. And this Swedish woman is like, when you die,
yep.
someone will have to go through all of your gear.
Right.
So why not make it a little easier for them?
Right.
In other words, why don't you do it now? Why wait until you die to clean your gear up? So it's a much more brutal kind of...
Well, it's brutal just thinking about it. Yeah.
It's very Swedish, I think, rather than Japanese. Whereas the Japanese can be brutal, but they can also be nice with it.
Oh, they're lovely people.
Lovely.
I was in Japan, it's now last year for the first time. I just couldn't believe how polite and nice and clean. It's so clean.
It's a wonderful culture.
It is. It has its downside.
But don't we all?
But yes,
if we're looking at it, if we're doing it right.
And that woman, I forget her name, but everybody's...
Marie Kondo.
Marie Kondo, yeah. So you got to hold things up and see if they bring you pleasure.
They bring joy. If they
joy.
If they don't spark joy.
Surprise, old batteries. That'll put a smile on my face.
Well, let's not go there. I found the most difficult thing is because I'm quite sentimental and I keep lots and lots of... And if working in the theatre over the years... As an actor and as a director, a lot of memorabilia and press cuttings and stuff come your way.
Yeah.
But what I've discovered, I've fired up my old scanner and it's great. You just scan up any reviews, all that sort of stuff, and then you can throw the physical thing away. And that's made an enormous dent in my pile of kipple.
Right. I used to keep all the newspapers I'd ever worked on. And then, we got to the point of having to move house to accommodate them.
Yeah.
And that's it's very liberating when you just say, I have never looked at these things in years, and I am going to put them away.
I've been finding that it's both stressful and liberating. And your house, while you're packing everything up, looks both depleted and yet still full of lots of things that you don't really need.
But that you can actually see now.
Yeah. I'm also surprised learning, and this is something I until this had happened, I would never have known this, I don't think. I'm also surprised at how much stuff we managed to get in a 78 square meter apartment. You would think it's small, but it's actually like a ship. There are nooks and crannies everywhere.
Yeah.
Our apartment is a relatively large space with the bedrooms and kitchen attached. So we're looking at places at the moment and wondering, where we, even though they're all bigger than the place we own, we're thinking, how are we going to fit all our stuff in here? Because a modern place doesn't have has a lot of storage often, but doesn't have so many walls to hang pictures on. So
no, it'll that's be true.
A salon hang, as they say.
Yeah.
One picture, one above the other.
Oh, right, yes. Oh, very good.
So there'll be a bit of that.
Well, you can put cables and things down.
Oh, yeah, you get all that stuff. It's all these days.
One of the best things I did in this apartment was, because they had really deep cupboards.
Yes,
which meant that
you've got hostages in there.
Well, you're not supposed to tell people that.
Okay, sorry.
And it meant that, you know, when you started digging, it was like doing an archaeological dig. It's like you're finding, oh, this is these lentils are from the period when I was working in television.
Well, I'm staggered. I found my birth certificate the other day. Now, I didn't even know I had it.
Right.
But my mum had obviously put some of these things together in an old scrapbook, which I found. I didn't even know I had that either. Because that's the other thing that happens. You think, wow, why do I still have that? And wow, how can I even have that? How can that even be?
Right.
But the journey of discovery is ongoing.
Mm. But I put in sliding drawers in the cupboards, so they slide all the way out. And now it hasn't changed. We still have stuff that's like ancient history in terms of pulses. But it's at least we can get to them
exactly
quicker.
And let's face it, that's the other thing that's been interesting is in terms of the gallery of gear that you've got.
Yeah.
I mean, I dropped a lot of my T-shirts and I got threw out a lot of things because I haven't had to for a long time.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm going to move all these things. Let's see what's any good. So I did thin my T-shirts by at least a third. And then the others, I thought, wow, this is where these are. I should wear these more often. They're actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So you end up using things that you haven't used for a long time because you think, well, if I'm still keeping them, I might as well give them a go.
Oh, and you're wearing a very attractive T-shirt.
I know it's my Yuri Gagarin.
Yuri Gagarin, but with Chinese writing.
Because I bought it in Shanghai in fantastic one of those not entirely above board markets where there are knockoffs of famous English and other designers. But there was a fantastic T-shirt store with all these terrific revolutionary images and pro-Soviet Yuri Gagarin. What's not to like?
I have some space food. I have astronaut
food. I bet Yuri
food.
Didn't have that kind of food.
And now that I'm vegetarian, I can't even eat it. But what do? Somebody buys you a packet of space food from the Space Museum in Moscow, and you go, and they say that it's in vending machines. People buy this stuff and eat it. So what do you do? Do you hold on to it? Because it will last forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or do you eat it? And then, stupidly, you become vegetarian like I did recently. And now
the
I can't
choice
eat,
is taken
can't,
away from you.
I have to give it to someone else. We'll have to take a picture of you in your attractive T-shirt for the pod.
Please do.
So you're out there. You're in the market.
We're looking.
Now.
We're looking.
It's like dating again.
It is like dating. It's like, you find particular places you like and you really form an attachment to them, but they're seeing other people.
Uh-huh.
So you've got to you've got to make sure you're seeing other people too. You've got to spread yourself around.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's kind of like being 15 again. You've got to sort of not allow yourself to get too boxed into a corner.
But you do, The next thing you know, you're writing poetry to
your house.
Yeah.
And you're visualizing how many times we've visualized what we would put where when you walk into a place. And we've only done a few so far.
Yeah.
We did make the emotional mistake of finding something we really liked very early on, which kind of upset our plan. We were set for a long campaign.
Right.
But it turned out we've actually found something we liked fairly early on. So now we're going to have to not allow that to completely skew our... Well, we won't. We'll find a way. We'll find a way.
But you've got this because you want to sell the apartment you're in.
Yes.
So you can afford to buy the one you're moving into.
That's the other thing that, of course, you soon realize the mechanics of buying and selling are only ever been of academic interest, but now very visceral interest.
Yeah.
You know that in order to go to if you like a property, but you see it's being auctioned before your place is sold, there's no point even thinking about it because, that's not going to...
There lies heartbreak.
Totally. Although it is good... I have a brother who works in the business and he said, look, whenever he's moved a lot, he said, the more places you see, the better sense you get of what you like. And he said, even if it sounds counterintuitive, you start to get your parameters a lot clearer. You start to realize how much you walk your target in,
Yes.
You start to get a sense of what really you need and what you don't. So that's been useful. And I pretty much know what I'll be doing with my Saturday mornings for the next eight weeks.
A couple of years ago, I wrote a book called The Ultimate Guide to Buying and Selling.
I recall it. I'm packing it away when I was putting my library away.
And then I devised this thing called the need, want, like list.
Yes.
So you go, I need, you know, two bedrooms and a study. And I need it to be near a park or a school or whatever. Maybe, or that could be a need, it could be a want, it could be a like.
Yes.
But basically you go, these are the things I need. I cannot
yes.
exist without these things. These are the things I want, which these are the things that would be good to have, but they're not deal breakers. And these are the things I'd really like to have. And that's the thing that when you've got two competing properties, you look to the third and you say, oh,
yes.
that one's got...
Yes.
That's what one's got the fabulous view of yes. Jimmy Thompson's apartment.
Yes,
that's,
which is, you know, it's the stalker's eye view.
Oh, absolutely. So, but that was the days when you went through the newspaper.
Yeah.
You're just putting rings around
yes.
things in the newspaper. Now you go online and does it still work? I think it does, but it kind of works in reverse.
Yeah.
You kind of, you go like, you click on how many rooms, three rooms.
Yes.
You know, yeah, does it have a balcony? Does it have a swimming pool? Da, 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 da. And then you find you've got no properties.
Yeah, you'll find the null set.
Yeah. and so you start unclicking boxes and eventually you get closer to the thing
yeah,
you're looking
right.
for.
Yeah, that's right.
So you find somewhere that you're keen on?
Yeah, we have, but I say we're still looking because, you know, we've got to keep dating until we can actually
yeah.
have...
you don't want to settle down too quickly.
No, exactly. I mean, you know we've taken some counsel and we've had a bit of a look around. And look, we will keep looking just partly because it's always this is the point. We've not been here very often where you get to look around, where every other time we've found something has chosen us in a way.
Yeah.
Or it's fell into our laps or... And, of course, there's, you know, what it'll cost and everything else. You know, that becomes its own very... When something's for auction, you don't know what it's going to cost. So it kind of... One of the things that we're hoping will help us give a little clarity to our search is once we've actually sold, we'll know how much money we've got and...
Yes, that gives amazing clarity.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, that's a
sinus clearing clarity.
Yeah, the focus that puts
totally,
on things.
Totally.
Warren, we have been. We could talk all day.
I know,
we
could talk all year. That is true, of course, and no one will be enlightened.
No one whatsoever. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. We should do this more often.
Absolutely. As always, it has been a pleasure for me too.
Something like that. Warren Coleman, thank you so much for coming on the Flat Chat Wrap.
Thank you, sir.
If you enjoy these podcasts, and would you still be listening if you didn't, you can subscribe free of charge on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and lots of other podcast platforms. As I said, it's free of charge, and that means the podcast will be delivered directly to your phone, laptop, or computer as soon as it's published. You'll find links at the end of the show notes. That's the related story on the Flat Chat website. And the website is where you go to find the stories we've been discussing today, as well as about 10 years of archives and, of course, your questions and answers on the Flat Chat forum. Just log in to flat-chat.com.au to ask a question or, even better, answer someone else's. Okay, thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon.